On this edition of Jazz Profiles, we'll celebrate the legacy of trumpeter Harry Sweets Edison. Sweets passed away in 1999.
He's one of the most distinctive trumpeters in jazz history, and his playing is as memorable as his name.
I don't know why I'm named Sweets. Lester Young gave me that name, and I don't know why I deserve the name Sweets. No one knows but him.
It's a perfect name.
Writer Stanley Crouch.
You know, as Duke Ellington said, some people can only be described by their names. In his case, his nickname is enough.
There's nobody in the world who has a better nickname than him.
Trumpeter Wynton Marsalis.
No one has a nickname that's more indicative of who they are than Sweets Edison. First, he's sweet in his ability to flirt with the ladies.
Why he would name me Sweets, I wouldn't know.
He's one of the greatest flirters of all time. Now, I thought I was a great flirter, but I'm not. No, I mean, he's like, oh, that Percy. He is a great flirter.
I hope I'm living up to that name, being sweet. Maybe that's why I have so many friends.
Harry Edison's nickname, Sweets, not only describes his disposition, but also the sound he gets from his trumpet.
His style of playing is sweet. He knows how to get the sweetest part of the note to come out of his horn. Oh, that Percy.
Nobody plays like Sweets. Nobody.
Saxophonist Frank West.
You know, as soon as you hear one note, you know it's Sweets. And that's what you need in jazz.
You can hear two measures and they'll say, that's Sweets, and everybody smiles, you know.
As trumpeter Clark Terry says, Sweets makes people smile with his impeccable sense of style, a style that has influenced countless other musicians.
People write arrangements and they use Sweets' licks. They use his time, the emphasis on the one note, beep, 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 beep. So there's known thing in the business, Sweetology.
Sweetology. It should be entered in a dictionary of musical terms. It's a simplicity of the most complex kind, with distinctive timing, a careful sparsity of notes, each one a different color and texture, and all drenched in the blues. It's the Sweets Edison way. Writer Stanley Crouch.
In Sweets Edison's case, you see a guy fully rounded in his sensibility because he has this great sense of humor on the one hand and extraordinary empathy for other people, you know. So he can tell you some astonishingly lewd joke on the one hand, so astonishingly lewd that it actually transforms itself in the telling to some kind of gutter-bound lyricism that seems to flip the direction over and become skybound. So he plays like that to me. And he can play those, what they call those dirty blues phrases. Then he can play those things that have such pure and beautiful sensitivity to the wonder of living and the difficulty of it. And that's what I think makes him a great man and a great player.
I'm Nancy Wilson. On this edition of Jazz Profiles, a tribute to the ever soulful Harry Sweets Edison. At the heart of all jazz lies the blues, and likewise, the blues sensibility is at the heart of Sweets Edison, who seems to capture and convey the stuff of life in his music.
Well, there's a certain feeling that you have to play the blues.
Sweets Edison.
blues is not a popular song like You Make Me Feel So Young, You Make Me Feel Like Spring Has Sprung. Blues is altogether different than that. I think the life that you have lived, you can sing the blues better. So you have to have lived the blues to play the blues.
Born October 10, 1920, Sweets Edison did get a taste of the blues. He hardly knew his father, a Zuni Indian, because he left when Sweets was just 6 months old. His mother, who was black, had to put him in the care of his grandmother in order to hold down a full-time job in a glass factory to support them. And when his grandmother passed away, when Sweets was just 5, his mother saw no choice but to give him to his uncle in Kentucky, who she thought could look after her little boy better than she. This was the beginning of Sweets Edison's musical career.
My uncle, he got an old cornet, a York, from someplace. He used to just go around the richer neighborhoods in Kentucky, you know, in the school. They would throw away instruments, so he would pick them up, and he would clean them and bring them to the house there. So he started me on the cornet, and I deplored it. I hated it. All the other boys out playing ball or riding bicycles and everything else, and here I would have to practice. But after hearing Louis Armstrong, I really wanted to try to play trumpet, which I'm still doing. Yeah, I think just about every trumpet player alive had picked him out of the crowd, because he was my dear friend Dizzy Gillespie. We were very dear friends. He used to say, if you're going to play a decent solo on a trumpet, you have to play something Louis Armstrong has played. And that's so true. That's so true, because there's nothing on the trumpet he hasn't done. You know, he was way, way ahead of his time.
Between listening to Louis Armstrong records on his uncle's Victrola and playing in little neighborhood bands and at church, Sweets began to immerse himself in music. At age 12, he moved from Kentucky to Columbus, Ohio, back to his mother, who put 50 cents down on a new trumpet for him so he could continue his ever-growing flirtation with music in his new surroundings.
Yeah, well, all the big bands used to come through Columbus. It was a great dance town, see? Ellington, Callaway, Fletcher Henderson, Benny Moten. We never got to hear the big white bands like Benny Goodman, the Casaloma Band, Dorsey, Artie Shaw. We never got to hear those bands because they played at a country club. But I used to sneak in dances to hear Louis Armstrong, and I would go home just overjoyed. You know, because my main man, I heard him tonight, Louis Armstrong. That was such a thrill to hear him, just to see him, just to look at him, you know. It was a thrill of a lifetime at that time to me.
Sweets Edison is one of the legions of men who were struck by Louis Armstrong at the peak of his physical power and intensity, which was in his 30s.
Writer Stanley Crouch.
And during that period, Armstrong laid down about four things that people drew from. One of them was this incredible manipulation of the rhythm to achieve swing. Another one was the development of a tone that was itself a musical statement. See, Louis Armstrong, somebody plays, just the sound they put on something, that's a statement. That's like the colors of a great painter. A great painter, if you just focus in on the color of the sky, that's a statement itself. Also, Armstrong showed people how to create these melodic phrases that made sense. And he played those riffs.
What I listened to was his soul. He was to come from where he came from and achieve what he achieved. It's like Thomas Edison discovering the electrolytes, the Victrola, you know. I'd put him in that category because the trumpet wasn't supposed to be played as a jazz instrument in those days. And here's a little orphan comes out playing its jazz that nobody ever thought that the trumpet could go that high and can be that prominent in a band, you know. He was absolutely a phenomenon. There will never be another Louis Armstrong. Never be another Louis Armstrong. He was inventor.
You're listening to NPR's Jazz Profiles, a tribute to trumpeter Harry Sweets Edison. I'm Nancy Wilson. Louis Armstrong's luminous creativity cast its rays on Sweets, who began down his path as a professional musician even before he finished high school. He got his first experience playing with Earl Hood, a local band in Columbus. Then, at 16, he traveled to Cleveland, where he joined the Jeter Pillars Orchestra, which took him to St. Louis. 2 years later, he found himself in New York City, playing with Lucky Millinder's band. And as he gathered this important experience and gained insight into the music, he also began to gain insight into life as a musician.
He really had to want to play jazz to suffer the indignation that you had to go through. So it was sometimes you wouldn't even think that you were a human, you know, going in the back, eating in the kitchen, can't go through the front door. When you get through playing, you had to go down the aisle by yourself, you know, and couldn't. The treatment was horrible. You had to have a great desire to be successful in this business, to continue on playing jazz.
Sweets Edison's desire for success was met in 1938, when, at age 18, he happened upon arguably the most significant opportunity of his lifetime.
It's midnight in Manhattan, and for the late dancers, CBS offers the music of Count Basie and his orchestra, coming to you from the famous store on 52nd Street in New York City.
He was picked up as a trumpeter for the Count Basie Band.
I should have paid Basie for playing in the band because I had so much fun. I had so much fun in the band.
Oh, yeah, a lot of fun. Because you had a lot of characters, and as I say, Basie didn't bother nobody, you know.
Saxophonist Frank West was in the Basie Band for 11 years.
It's just a bunch of people that knew what they were about, they knew what they were doing, and Basie just let you do whatever you did, you know.
And what did Sweets do? Here's writer Albert Murray.
Sweets is a type of devilish guy, and of course, you know, that's why they call him Sweets, not because he was... So he could sit up there on the stage, though, and look so innocent and nice. He did have a sweet countenance. But underneath that, you see, he had all kinds of mischief going, see? Well, Basie appreciated the mischief.
Listen to this 1947 recording of Take a Little Off the Top, which opens with some classic Basie Sweets banter.
CB!
Sweet!
What do you know, Dave?
Everything's fine, Bob.
Just got in town.
Where are you on your way to now?
The barbershop.
Barbershop, wonderful. Here's Esquire Barbershop right here. And there's a cat on the front chair I'd like you to know. It's my personal friend, Barbara Brown, meet Sweets Edison.
Hello, Sweets. I'm glad to know you. Come on in and take a seat. Now, what can I do for you? Anything at all?
Take a little off the top. Take a little off the top. Take a little off the top. Then stop.
The Basie Band was known as a tight-knit group who could swing hard and stomp the blues. Again, writer Albert Murray.
No other jazz expression is more obviously directly connected with the basic blues statement than Count Basie's music. In other words, Count Basie is the man of stomp in the blues, because that's what the Midwest was. They were playing stomp. They call it stomp, which means an up-tempo blues shout. That's what my theory of the blues is, that it's not commiseration music. It's music which acknowledges the fact that life is rough, and you either accept the necessity to get with it, or you just wallow and cry. Now, people like to think of, to look at a background of slavery, they think they cry. No, any fool that knows anything about the blues knows it's good time music. And so one of the ways you know they're shouting, when that band hits, and then Sweets Addison takes that getaway solo, you know they gonna be ready tonight.
Rumor had it that if you wanted to stay in the Basie band, you had to be able to swing. In fact, Lester Young had a bell that he'd ring if he thought a solo was stale, and Basie would give the solo to someone else.
Swinging is a feeling that you get when you're playing.
Sweets Addison.
And the way that you knew that you were swinging in my era is when people would get up to dance. See, they would give you a cue if you're being enjoyed or not, especially in the Savoy or in the Apollo. I've seen the audience throw tomatoes to some bands that come in there and feel sorry for them because they didn't come up to the expectations of the audience in the Apollo Theater. If the Lindy Hoppers didn't like the way that the band played, you wasn't going to be there too long.
The Basie Band's success can be traced in part to their cohesion as a group.
Well, we just gel together. You know, it's just like being with a woman for so many years, you get used to her. That's like being in a band so long. You know what, if you're another trumpet player sitting next to me, if he does something, I know just what he's going to do. We used to read each other's mind almost and know what to do. He'd be noodling on the piano, noodling, all of a sudden we all would come in. See, that was a great thrill, just to know when to come in. Everybody would hit together.
What was different about it, as tight as it was the most relaxed band you ever want to be in, you know.
Again, saxophonist Frank West.
But I mean, everybody could put their shoulder to the wheel when they wanted to, but it still was a relaxed scene. It wasn't nothing uptight about Basie's band. Basie wasn't uptight. Wasn't nobody in the band uptight. It was a free thing. He never bothered nobody, you know. He never even rehearsed the band. He get the musicians he want, and he let them do what they know how to do. That's the only way you can have a band. You can't fire somebody every 6 months and have a band. He let them stay there. He let them stay there till everybody gets used to everybody, you know. And then the music comes out. And he just sit there and wait.
The Basie Band of 1938, when Sweets joined, was a unit of skillful soloists. Among them, the famous pair of tenors, Lester Young and Herschel Evans, and Sweet's fellow trumpeter, the green-eyed, good-looking Buck Clayton. Again, writer Albert Murray.
Most people heard the Basie Band on jukeboxes on records, and they heard a lot about Buck Clayton, and they saw Buck Clayton, and then Billie Holiday had said some nice things about Buck Clayton. So most people assumed that Buck Clayton was the star trumpet player in the band, and so he was better known than Sweet's. So people just assumed that. They wouldn't listen to them. It's just Count Basie and there's this thing like that. But they wouldn't realize until they saw the band that the getaway trumpet player You gotta set it up with Sweets.
Sweets Edison in 1949 with the Count Basie Band playing Wonderful Thing.
I learned a lot from Count Basie. Oh, did I learn a lot from Basie. He used to say it's not how many notes that you put in a solo that makes it a good solo, but it's how many notes you leave out.
The more you know, the less time it takes to say it.
Albert Murray.
And everybody says, Basie knows what to leave out. I like the analogy of Count Basie and Matisse, because they could do in one page what the other guy couldn't do in 25 pages. The early Matisse, you see all that proliferation of details. Put a rug down here, put a drapery so it can have all kinds of stuff. He's playing notes all over the place. You follow me? But the past master Matisse put cutouts with construction paper. Or he could take the thing and just draw one line up there and say, look at that beautiful girl on the beach. Just one line on a sheet of paper. So that's a principle. That's a very important aesthetic principle, which one certainly gets out of the Basie Band, because what you get is stuff stripped down to fundamentals.
Otherwise known as Basie economy, a principle that Sweets quickly and very effectively embraced.
So Sweets' statement, it's based on that type of abbreviation and so forth, but fully informed with what the hell is being left out. But if you leave it out, that's what Hemingway always said, you know, 7/8 of the iceberg, that's the Hemingway principle. He said, what you write is the 1/8, but that suggests the 7/8 was below the surface of the iceberg. But Sweets belongs to that tradition. It's in there. You heard all the stuff he did play. He and Basie did play. Somehow it's there.
Sweets Edison with the Count Basie Band in 1949 playing Sweets, a tune co-written by Basie and Sweets.
Originality was very important in that era. There were no two people that sounded alike among all the soloists that you can mention. Coleman Hawkins had his sound. You could tell Coleman Hawkins on any record. Lester Young, Billie Holiday, everybody was different. Nobody in those days wanted to be an imitator. Everybody wanted to be an originator. I think that's one of the greatest achievements a performer can achieve, is to find something that nobody can do but him.
As Sweets Edison often says, he'd rather be the world's worst originator than best imitator. And, as you will hear, an originator he is. I'm Nancy Wilson. You're listening to Jazz Profiles, a tribute to trumpeter Harry Sweets Edison, from NPR, National Public Radio.
are two very, very difficult things that are central to playing in jazz.
Writer Stanley Crouch.
Learning who you are and learning how to create a sound that people can recognize and understand as who you are. Edison's done that. He's done that. When he starts playing, you know that's him.
Nobody plays like Sweets, you know, nobody.
Saxophonist Frank West.
You know, as soon as you hear one note, you know it's Sweets. And that's what you need in jazz. In jazz, you need an identity, you know, and he definitely has that.
He is a great innovator, one of the greatest innovators of all times, and I don't know anybody who doesn't recognize Sweets.
Trumpeter Clark Terry.
You can hear two measures, and he'll say, that's Sweets, and everybody smiles, you know.
He's a style unto himself.
Trumpeter Wynton Marsalis.
If you want to be a trumpeter in jazz and you listen to Sweets, his style of playing will add immeasurably to what you play.
A jazz musician not only plays his or her instrument, but uses it as a vehicle to express his or her personality. And that's why it's so difficult for one musician to sound like another. You can play the same notes, but it's how you play them that counts. Wynton Marsalis recently spent some time in a studio with Sweets, trying to pick up on some of his signature devices, or Sweetology.
Right there. See, instead of playing a whole lot of notes there, just hold that one note out. That's the way I play. Mm-hmm. It don't have to be right.
What about just to give them an example, like play a little something on that same A flat, and I'm gonna just try to show you how difficult it is to imitate the sound of it. Oh.
This is Sweets.
Yeah.
This is Wynton. Sweets.
Like something like that. That.
Winter.
Yeah, but you do that with the vowel. Yeah.
See, that's something that you might listen to that on a record and you'd have no idea of it, to just press the third valve down a little bit.
Yeah.
Like if I play with the third valve up, it's like, when I press it down a little bit, it's like.
That's it. Uh-huh.
What about that little drop off, Sweets? How can I get that little tail on it, that little cute tail that you get?
With your tongue, like. That's it. Yeah.
Oh, man. Lord have mercy.
Sweets is a master of something that Ellington used to preach to us all the time. He said, simplicity is a most complex form.
Clark Terry.
And Sweets is a master of simplicity. He can get more out of one note than most people can get out of a whole course.
Frank West.
people, they concentrate on three elements of music, which are rhythm, melody, and harmony. But they forget about silence, you know. And silence is one of the more important elements of music, you know. And he understands that well.
He don't have to play a lot of notes. He can play two or three, and they carry the meaning of everything he wants to say.
Wynton Marsalis.
And it just has a certain feeling. Plus, his time is so good. Sweets has great time. He's what you call in the pocket. He just can make the time feel a certain way because he can get inside the groove. And then once he gets inside that groove, well, then he can play around with it as much as he wants. Because even when he's playing around with it, once he comes back to it, oof, it's just his time is just impeccable. It's like a great dancer.
It's kind of like standing next to a great chef who always seems to understand the right proportions.
Stanley Crouch.
And you're watching them, and the way they grate some cheese or something, it seems like they just go whack, 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 whack. It's like, say, for instance, if this takes 8 whacks, right, they may be 8. The first 4 might be the same, but then the next 4, they may not cut as deeply into the cheese, right? When they're going there, they can tell, oh, this is going to be too much. See, also, there's another element in Ellis Edison's playing, too, though, to me, that is very, very interesting. See, he has an encyclopedic recognition of the psi. He did something he can get to that you have to know something to play that. He's heard that and what that really means, you know. See, because the female psi is one of the most powerful sounds in all of human existence. You know, and he can play that. He can make you feel that when he plays. You know, he can do certain things with his sound, make you feel that. See, that's one of the most important sounds in all of music because it's one of the most important sounds in all of human existence. That one.
I don't know how I developed what you say a style. Just the way that I think. You have to play the way that you think. It's just like a painter. You can tell a Rembrandt from a Van Gogh. You can tell a Rembrandt from a Michelangelo, you know, by certain strokes that they have on their brush, I guess. I don't know.
The Sweets Edison style, with its roots in Louis Armstrong and its leaved and twined in Count Basie, was in full bloom when in 1950, because of debt and the changing musical climate, Count Basie broke up his band. Despite the intimidation of an independent identity, after spending 13 formative years with the group, Sweets struck out on his own at age 30 and was not disappointed. He went on tour with Norman Granz's Jazz at the Philharmonic, became a very highly sought-after freelance musician, playing gigs with everyone from Duke Ellington to Stan Getz. He was music director for Josephine Baker, and in getting this varied experience, discovered perhaps one of his greatest talents, which is playing with vocalists.
I love to play behind singers. You get a chance to lay out while they're singing and come in when they take a breath. It's a very difficult thing to play behind a singer, and you have to compliment them because you're an accompanist. You know, they're the ones that are starring out there, so you can't play a whole lot of notes and let it be your solo because they're the ones that's doing the singing, you know.
This humility with which Sweets approaches a musical dialogue has served him well, because just about every great vocalist in jazz has had the pleasure of singing over that trumpet. Billie Holiday, Joe Williams, Ella Fitzgerald, Sarah Vaughan, Ethel Waters, Frank Sinatra, Billy Eckstine, Carmen McRae, Lena Horne, and even Nancy Wilson. My very first album, and so many of the albums since then, nothing is better than hearing Harry's muted trumpet behind those beautiful words. Listen to some of Sweet's best.
Now you go through St. Louis, chop to Missouri, and Oklahoma City looks mighty pretty. You'll see Amarillo, Gallup, New Mexico, Flagstaff, Arizona, don't forget Winona, Kingman, Boston, San Bernardino. Won't you get hip to this timely tip when you make that California ship? I get your kicks on Route 66.
I don't know why I love you like I do. I don't know why, I just do. I don't know why you thrill me like you do. I don't know why, but you do. You never seem to want my romancing. The only time you hold me is when we're dancing. I don't know why I love you like I do. I don't know why, I just do.
What little moonlight can do. Oh, what little moonlight can do to you. You're in love, your hearts are fluttering all day long. You only stutter cause your poor tongue just will not utter the words I love you. Wait a while till a little moonbeam comes peeping through. You'll get bold, you can't resist him, and all you'll say when you have kissed him is, ooh, what a little moonlight can do.
Trumpeter Sweets Edison with Billie Holiday in 1954 on What a Little Moonlight Can Do. And before that, with Joe Williams in 1961 on I Don't Know Why, and with Nat Cole in 1956 on Route 66. You're listening to NPR's Jazz Profiles, a tribute to Sweets Edison. I'm Nancy Wilson.
What a little moonlight can do.
In addition to his great partnerships with vocalists, Sweets has played and recorded with a plethora of saxophonists. Among them, Lester Young, Coleman Hawkins, Ben Webster, Johnny Hodges, and most prolifically, Eddie Lockjaw Davis.
He and Lockjaw used to play together. And Sweetser said, listen to it, he plays everything backwards.
Saxophonist Frank West.
But I mean, they complemented each other, you know, that both of their styles were very individual, you know, and still it's the same groove, you know, more or less. Both of them thought the other one played backwards, you know. They actually didn't, you know, it all fit. I always loved to hear them play together.
Written by Sweets Edison and recorded in 1977 with tenor saxophonist Eddie Lockjaw Davis. Over his distinguished career, Sweets has recorded more albums than he can keep track of, especially considering all those he appeared on as a studio musician in Hollywood during the 60s and 70s, playing with everyone from Diana Ross to the Jackson 5. One of his more recent recordings, done in 1997, is from a live recording at the Iridium Jazz Club in New York, featuring the so-called Golden Horns of Jazz, Frank West and Clark Terry, both fellow alumni of the Basie Band.
We have that in common. That makes the chemistry work as soon as you hit the bandstand. So I had a real ball, and that makes a session better when you love to play with everybody, and especially if they're old friends, you know, that makes it better. Half the time we're laughing, you know.
A dear partner and brother, Mr. Clark Terry. The lovable, the adorable, the irresistible, the impeccable, the incomparable, the epitome, the echelon, the synchronized, masculine, the alpha and the omega.
The effervescent, the vivacious, the lovable, his magnificence, Harry Sweets Edison, Sweets' glorious, grandiloquent introduction of himself.
Wynton Marsalis.
He's funny. I mean, just the stories he tells is funny. He can tell you a story that's so sad it'll make you cry, but he'll have you laughing the whole time. Like about somebody messing over him or something happening. It'll be a tragedy, but he'll have everybody in the room dying of laughter. He really is funny. He's not a joke teller. Not that kind of funny. He's a wit. Like you say something and he'll come up with something else to make it funny.
In Count Basie's autobiography, as told to Albert Murray, he comments, Sweets is a guy that gets an awful lot of humor in all of his playing. I mean, it's alive. And to be a complete musician, you need to bring more to the bandstand than just your instrument.
He validates everybody. Like he's always trying to make you feel better about what you're doing, but not by patronizing you. He'll tell you the truth. He ain't gonna lie to you. He will tell you what's happening. And while you're playing, he's co-signing you. Like, he's saying, yeah, baby boy. Yeah, that's it. All right. Yeah, you got to, when you get a good note, you got to hold on to it. Like, he'll tell you when you play something, you know, you need some weight on your tone. You know, he's always giving you something that you need. And then when he starts to play, well, he's going to uplift the band because of the soul that he plays with. His presence is soulful. He brings a groove with him.
Embraceable You, recorded in 1962.
playing is fun. You know, and when it ceases to be fun, you should retire, because it's fun to play. And you love to play. And you don't retire from something you love. You retire from what you call a job, because playing music is not a job. It's a pleasure. Mm-hmm.
The master of creating drama out of simplicity. Harry Sweets Edison has led a long and fruitful career. He was one of the superlative soloists of the Count Basie Band. He's been one of the most acclaimed instrumental accompanists for jazz vocalists. He's a composer and arranger, and one of the most distinctive voices in jazz trumpet. Frank West.
You had like Louis Armstrong, who people tried to emulate, and Roy Eldridge, you know, and people tried to play like Roy, and Dizzy used to play like Roy, and then people tried to play like Dizzy, you know, and I said, but, you know, it ain't that many people to play like Sweets. You know, I don't know whether they can capture that or not.
He's Sweets. He's something.
Wynton Marsalis.
Never been nobody like him. He's just original. He's original. That's what he always said. You got to be yourself when you pick your horn up. And nobody else. You got to be yourself. If you're not yourself, put your horn down. Pick your horn up, baby boy. You got to find yourself. Let it come out your horn. That's right. Let it come out. Don't hold it in. Because if you don't play yourself, it won't get played.
Still trying to be a pioneer of that art form, jazz. Trying to create something, you know, that hasn't been done, which is hard to do because there's nothing new under the sun. Everything's been done before. But I have tried to create something different on the horn that I can be remembered by, like a sound that when it's heard, they can say that's Sweets. And I'm trying to give happiness to people. Yeah, that's what jazz is supposed to make you happy. Jazz is supposed to make you happy. That sums the whole thing up. That sums it up.
Our tribute to Harry Sweets Edison was written and produced by Molly Murphy. Post-production engineer, Rima Snyder. Special thanks to the Institute for Jazz Studies at Rutgers University, Rob Bamberger, Jack Kreisberg at the Blue Note, Bill Titone, and NPR's Making the Music with Wynton Marsalis. Jazz Profiles is produced by Tim Owens. Assistant producer, Madeline Smith. Website coordinator, Bettina Owens. The vice president for NPR's cultural programming is Murray Horwitz. To email us, or for more information about this and other programs in our series, contact us through NPR's homepage on the World Wide Web at npr.org. That's npr.org. Major support for Jazz Profiles comes from the Lila Wallace Reader's Digest Fund, helping people to make the arts part of their everyday lives. Additional support has been provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting and the National Endowment for the Arts. I'm Nancy Wilson, and this is NPR, National Public Radio.
You've been listening to a celebration of the musical life of trumpeter Harry Sweets Edison. Sweets passed away in 1999. Discover more great jazz at NPR Music, including our new series, Live at the Village Vanguard, live webcasts and archives from America's premier jazz club. Check it out at nprmusic.org.